I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Welcome to WBAI. This is Let Them Talk pop-up version, and we're here again, 8 o'clock, 8:03 actually, in the evening, Saturday, and we're going to talk about something really interesting. We're going to be talking about something very few people know anything about. It's called, well, it's a large multiple-pronged project. One part of that project is called the East Side Coastal Resiliency Project. And other parts refer to the neighborhood known as Two Bridges, another part to the area on Lower Manhattan around the Battery and up on the West Side. And what this is because of Sandy, right? If anybody remember Sandy, that little storm, Superstorm Sandy, our engineer, James Ursay, is raising his hands. And when the ocean came in to the island and swamped huge areas and we had no power, I personally had no power for 6 or 7 days. And half of the lower part of Manhattan had no power. And it made that incredible photograph on the cover of Atlantic, right? The Atlantic, or New Yorker, one of those magazines. And so, of course, the city had to respond to that because it turns out global warming is real. Climate change is real. Sea level rise is real. And the fact is that the oceans are rising. Now, I could read you all the numbers, 8 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet, whatever you want to believe. But the city has said some very interesting things. Number one, there's going to be a 250% increase. 250, it's 2.5 times more heat waves in New York City in a short time, soon, coming soon to a city near you. 2.5 times more heat waves, and that those heat waves are going to be significantly more intense and longer, and that there's going to be a 6 or 7 degree increase in the average temperature of New York City. It's going to be like Florida up here. Florida is coming to us for once instead of us going to Florida. And that's just the part of it. The storms are going to become massively more intense. There is a 1% chance of a Sandy storm every year, which doesn't mean that means that there's a 1% chance, 1 out of 100 chance at any time for a Sandy storm. And there's a much higher chance of smaller but extremely intense storms. And these storms will come into the city and they will flood the city. Huge areas of the city are expected to be flooded. So in order to deal with this, the city has come up with this program. And that program is to basically, well, it's different in different areas, but it's basically to erect huge walls, huge metal barriers, to put up temporary remediation, like these weird balloons they fill with water and have different funny names for. Tiger walls. These, like, they're basically the same things they use blocks of concrete to keep, car bombers from driving up on the sidewalk. And they're going to just put them next to each other and put their weigh 1.5 tons each. They're filled with dirt. And these other ones are like tubes that they fill with water and they're long and they're going to put them around buildings. It seems like not every building can be protected because of the lay of the land, according to the city. So we're going to talk about this and we're going to take your calls. And just to inform you, I should inform folks that I'm a member of Community Board 3. I'm appointed by Gail Brewer and have been for about the last 6-7 months sitting in on meetings of the Parks Committee of Community Board 3 and of the Community Board 3 regular monthly meetings. And so I've had been privy to this information, which very few other people are getting. Now, it's on the internet, but most people don't know where to find it. It's a plethora, an alphabet soup of organizations involved. And it's not really clear because, and we'll talk more about this, there was an original plan that was worked out with the community over several years, and then boom, recently the city just changed the plan entirely, 180-degree total change without any notice. And they said, we have to do this new plan by a certain date in the summer. It has to be approved, fast-tracked right through, or else we're going to lose money that is earmarked for this program. So this has everybody worked up, and you can imagine the people who live down there are afraid that their homes are going to get washed out if they don't do something, while other people are saying this plan to change the lay of the land, rip up miles of parkland, rip up miles of streets to put in untried and untested mechanical doohickeys to allegedly keep the water out. And how are we going to keep these? They can't even keep the elevators fixed going down to the subway. So how are we going to fix that? It's got everybody in a tizzy. So we're going to be talking about that. Let's go first to a report from the news. It was anchored by Heather J. Chin, who works on the news with us here at WBAI. And it's an interview with a community member who knows a lot about this, who's going to lay it out. Then when she's done, we're going to invite on Joel Kupferman, who's an attorney, an environmental attorney here in the city. And he's going to tell us more about this project and the problems with it. So we're going to begin with this program, with this 5 or 6 minute clip that tells you a little bit about what exactly is going on in Lower Manhattan.
Elsewhere around the boroughs, residents of Community Board 3 in Manhattan's Lower East Side were taken by surprise when representatives from the city's Department of Design and Construction revealed that flood protection plans that had already underwent 4 years of community review would be replaced by a new plan. Called the East Side Coastal Resiliency Project, the project aims to raise East River Park and install underwater seawalls. WBAI's Paul DiRienzo spoke with Naomi Schiller, local resident and anthropologist and member of the East River Alliance. She says the sudden about-face by the city has left the community reeling and full of unanswered questions.
We have a lot of questions about, you know, the lack of you know, respect for the community, the lack of respect for a democratic process. They, you know, they have a lot of reasons why they changed the plan. They're always sort of shifting their reasons. And, you know, one day it's because we can't close the FDR. Another day it's because, you know, this project was going to take too long. You know, meanwhile, the clock has been ticking. And what we've been asking for is we want independent experts, right, that can evaluate this plan. Does it really make sense? Is it really better than the old plan? The governor convened a panel of independent experts to look at the L train shutdown, for example. The neighborhood parks, Brooklyn Heights in Brooklyn, a very wealthy neighborhood, was able to convene, you know, experts to try to and through pressure from elected officials, was able to convene a plan to rethink the BQE redesign. So we are also asking for an independent panel of experts to look at, you know, does this plan really meet the demands of the most recent climate science about sea level rise and the long-term impacts on our air, on our water quality, the impacts of, you know, displacing all this water onto other communities around us. So we have a lot of demands, and we're really concerned that equity has been, you know, pushed to the side, and this plan is a fast-track plan to force this sort of down our throats without consideration of really important questions. And we're in a difficult spot because we want flood protection. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So they're sort of holding a gun to our heads about that any delay is the threat that another Hurricane Sandy is going to come along, and that somehow it will be on us for delaying the plan if that happens before flood protection is in place. It's been really challenging to figure out how to tackle this.
Why, after spending all that time and effort, why would they just radically rip it up? Who gains? You know, the old Latin saying, you know, who benefits?
We don't have a lot of information about, people have raised questions about who is gaining from this. What are the financial interests behind this? And we haven't come up with any information about that. I mean, I think what is clear is that there was a reorganization of the Department of Design and Construction, and the commissioner, Lane Grillo, was brought in, and her new deputy commissioner, who we've been dealing a lot, who's in charge of this sort of project manager on this, Jamie Springer, came in, and they came in with a mandate to bring projects to a close on a timeline. DDC, the Department of Design and Construction, is notorious for going way over budget and taking forever, right? And you can dig into the various projects that this has happened to, that they've been over, you know, they've been responsible for. So I think, you know, they were under this pressure to look at this project. This was one of the first projects they looked at, and they said, I mean, at least what they said to the community is, you know, it's not realistic for us to do this in the timeline that is set forth. And also the budget isn't realistic. So the budget, you need to understand, went from $760 million for the old project to $1.45 billion for this new project to build roughly 2 miles of a seawall along Lower Manhattan. It's also important to know that all of these seawall projects are happening in piecemeal fashion around Lower Manhattan. So this is just the East Side Coastal Resiliency Project.
Yeah. Just focusing on the Lower East Side, they want to spend more money. The new project, the new plan, is double what the old plan was.
Exactly. So we have a lot of questions. One of the most popular designs several years ago was a design to actually deck the FDR, to place decking on top of it, and to use part of that decking and berm system to create coastal flood protection, which would have, I mean, it's complicated, but it had the possibility of possibly reducing emissions in a community. There are 10,000 NYCHA residents who live along East River Park where this is happening, right? The majority of people who live right on this park, right, who are going to be, this is a frontline community who are facing, you know, massive problems with quality of air over the at least 3.5 years that this project is going to take. That's what they say it's going to take, but we know it's going to be probably a lot longer. So, you know, thinking about the lives and air quality of an environmental justice community, yeah, we have a lot of questions about all of them.
That was Naomi Schiller, local resident and member of the East River Alliance.
I'm Paul D'Rienzo, and this is a pop-up version of the program Let Them Talk, and we are focusing on, as you heard, this East River Resiliency Project, which has gone through so many changes and conniptions after years of working with the community to develop a plan. Boom, the city came up and said, ripped it up, and went with one that's double the price. Billions of dollars, from hundreds of millions to billions of dollars, that will rip up all the parks along the shore, replace them with walls and retaining devices, and yet it seems, all in the eyes of many, just designed to protect the FDR Drive, which, you know, politically, has that something to do with congestion pricing and protecting the one route in for outer borough people without having to pay the congestion pricing? I don't know. But some of these questions we're going to deal with from a legal perspective with WBAI's very own Joel Kupferman. Welcome to WBAI, Joel.
Good evening. How are you?
Great to have you on. We met today at a meeting about the gardens and another problem, but I find these all connected in one way or another. An attempt by the city to enforce basically onerous new rules on the many, many hundreds of community gardens in the Lower East Side and throughout New York City. And I was happy to see you there. And I asked you about the East Side Resiliency Project and what you thought about it, because the environment is your thing. And you're a lawyer. So legally, from a legal perspective, what do you think is going on here, Joel? What do you know about it?
I think it's basically taking all the legal reviews that were set up in terms of CEQA, State Environmental Quality Review Act, and CEQA and ULIP or whatever, turning it upside down on its head and basically ignoring all those laws and regulations and procedures that took us so long to do.
Could you turn down your radio, by the way? I think we hear your radio in the background, because there's a little bit of a few seconds delay, so you might find that a little confusing. The listeners, we can hear.
I have no radio.
Oh, no radio? Okay, we heard it's like an echo. Okay, that's all right. Ignore us. So that's very interesting. So you see this as an end run against environmental laws?
Completely. And in some ways, the microcosm that's happening is happening within the Parks Department. There's a forestry division, and most of them are well-versed in the value of trees and preserving trees and the like. And they are overridden over and over again by Capital Construction.
What is Capital? Just to explain for people, because it's...
Sure, Capital Construction Center, I don't know if that's the exact name or whatever, is the capital arm of building arm of...
DDCS or DDSC or something, the Department of...
Right. Yeah. They're actually in Flushing that deals with all the boroughs. So I think they have their computer key on concrete stuck in terms of ordering concrete as opposed to ordering the green... and natural resources in terms of preserving and planning for adding more natural resources. The city and the state is going through a tree massacre. I represent the residents of Smith Houses, a $56 million rebuild from Hurricane Sandy, and yet that money is being spent to a contractor that continually has cut down the limbs, the roots of the trees, compacted the soil, and it's going to leave Smith with less trees than they had before.
And, Smith,
and it was ironic.
Yeah. I just want to explain that to get a lay of the land for folks. Smith Houses is a Mitchell-Lama or a NYCHA?
New York City Housing Authority
yeah.
complex built in 1949-1950, right by the East River and bordering the Brooklyn Bridge.
I see. So they had a lot of damage. What happened with Sandy in that region and along these?
Well, Sandy came up and hit three or four of the buildings. They were flooded. They were flooded out. And it took a while for them to get the electric and other utilities up and running. And NYCHA stepped in with money from FEMA. Probably an aggregate of like $1 billion when there's more money to be spent. But we're horrified that all the requirements, the contract requirements of protecting those trees and even the construction has left the residents, you know, in a worse state. And only that when they did construction on the roof, it just literally opened up the ceilings and they were hit with asbestos and lead that came down and water that went through the roofs. So why I bring that up is that we're very concerned about East River Park, that the city and the state has yet to really show us they could do any type of construction job, you know, especially a very large construction job, without endangering the workers and the neighbors. You know, it's the engineering plans are there. It could be done, but continuously and over again, they showed us they cannot. So, they, you know, we're really fearful of them putting us in harm's way.
I see. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You go, Joel. You have the information.
When the Parks Department, they actually gave a presentation at Smith because they're trying to reach out to, you know, give a little credit for reaching out to neighbors, you know, of the people, all those NYCHA residents and others that use the park or whatever. And that's a little false also. We'll talk about that later. It's like they'll do these outreach and then just basically take that as the community approving what they're saying or whatever. But one of the first things that they showed us was a plan for the ball fields, and they knew that I was handing out pages there at this meeting protesting the city park's use of Roundup, that really bad herbicide that's out there. And in response to my protestations of the use of Roundup, they said, don't worry, Joel, the soccer field that we're building is going to be using artificial turf. And I said, I shrieked, and I said, unprofessionally, but I still shrieked, I said, that's the last thing you want to use is artificial turf in a resiliency project. So to me, that is totally emblematic of how bad their planning is, even the use of materials that's there.
Why, in your opinion, do you think they went through all the meetings and years of looking for community input only to just throw it out the door at the last minute?
I think it's to assuage, you know, dissuade the public to try to follow the, you know, the so-called guidelines or whatever. And I think they gave in a little too much. And the city and the Parks Department is definitely not a monolith. There's, like I said before, the Forestry Division is really good. So there's people are there. And I believe, and I just feel, you know, deep down that they were just basically overridden by City Hall or people, you know, people that are higher up. So we have to remember that in some ways the strongest force in New York is REBNY, which is the Real Estate Board of New York. And they continuously lobby city council. There's hearings on bills, and it looks like they're going to pass a pretty good bill. And lo and behold, 2-3 weeks later, we get a new version. So this was, the similar thing that happened, you know, before. So just in terms of just, not even the political end, but sort of from a legal end, the new plan is just basically a rejection of the first, and at least they should go back to the community again, you know. And they also said they did have hearings, but they've done this over and over again, where those hearings, where the public and many, many people have voiced total discontent, and they'll come back and they'll just totally mischaracterize it as approval. So.
What should we think about all these, if you go on the websites and you see all these beautiful graphic presentations of how our gorgeous waterfront is going to look and that everything's going to be perfect, and they're going to have these huge, like the paving stones will actually lift up at a 90 degree angle, and that'll form a wall that'll prevent the water from coming in. And everybody's saying wall, wall, wall. I mean, is this related to Donald Trump's wall? I mean, is this a wall mania?
Well, in some ways it's this belief that, right, that wall can keep out. We're also going to remember, we're seeing bad designs at Smith. The wall that they're building to keep the water out of the entrance to the doors is actually locking the people in who have wheelchairs. They just did this with total disregard of not only people in wheelchairs, but there's improper drainage in that area. So basically, they're creating pools for water to start filling up and trapping people in the water. So it's bad. It's not only just bad, but also it goes against what every other city and the Netherlands and everywhere else is using and doing.
How do the real estate people, basically the construction companies, have New York by the throat? And one of the things that struck me was when people brought up the issue of jobs, would these projects bring jobs to New Yorkers? They said, oh, these are all union jobs, so they have to come from the union list that the companies have. And most of those workers, they said something like thousands of workers will be bussed in from Texas to do the work.
Well, that's true. I'm a National Lawyers Guild lawyer, so I'm definitely pro-union, but I think the city is really good in terms of pitting one against the other, and you can't say the city's...
That's what I'm getting at.
Jobs to begin with, but they'll throw that in. So we believe that if you're going to spend that much money, you could do 3, 4, 5 jobs that are environmentally sound. You could even spend that money rebuilding the sewage plants and the like. So there are plenty of construction jobs, you know.
Uh-huh. It strikes me, Joel, that that there was a real element of playing the fears of the people who live in the NYCHA housing and in the other housing that's along there, the Mitchell Lama housing, this fear of that their homes are going to be, they're already flooding they say every time it rains, they flood already, and that there's an inexorable rise in the sea level as it is, and that if we don't build this and take the city's deal that we have to take by the summer or else they're never going to do it, is the threat they're making. We're going to lose our homes. While environmentalists like yourself and others are saying, whoa, put the brakes on this, and then there's a fight all of a sudden set up between you people don't care about us and our homes. And the other people saying, you don't care about the city and the environment.
I'm not seeing all the NYCHA residents because I believe some have there's a little schism between the people that just spoke before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Environmental Association, right?
Right, and NYCHA residents, and I think that's been unfairly and disingenuously played up by the city. The NYCHA, what they did is they went into Baruch, another housing complex that's near East River Park, and they cut down, I think, 40, 50 trees in fear, I guess, of us even being involved for trying to protect those trees. So this the city that is not protecting the NYCHA residents. Part of our problem is that they want to sell off the land that's there and build and putting people into further flood areas. But also, the city is so-called so protective of the waterfront, we have to look into the building, the Extel building that's there. 60, 70 stories that tall, right on the East River, and that should not be built. So the city definitely also speaks with forked tongue. They tell us how important it is to preserve the waterfront, whatever. But building after building has been allowed to be built on places that shouldn't be built.
Right. So that's what the community, that the word I'm getting from the community members who are not present at the community board, or just some few representatives, is that this is just a continuation of the plan, especially in the Two Bridges area, to build these gigantic 80-story mega towers. They want to build 4 or 5 more of them. And then there's other plans to consolidate land that exists between the NYCHA houses and put buildings on those that would all be luxury housing on the waterfront, and that there's been a lot of resistance to that. And this is a way to create a feeling of terror in people's minds that you better take it or else you're going to lose everything.
Took the words right out of my mouth. And also, I got to say that we're I think the guy's running for president now, right? The mayor.
Yeah,
that
de Blasio.
Keeps on the public-private partnership. And to me, partnership implies some way of some parity or equality or equity between the two parties. And we've seen of even trying to save a garden in Coney Island that the city allowed one developer to own 70% of the land in Coney Island. And that was part of the, you know, we keep on losing more and more land to these developers and being told that this is the only way to get increased housing. But time and time again, in law, after lawsuits in court and elsewhere, we're told that even though the city had an agreement with these partners, we have to give in to them because the rate of return is, you know, can't be met. They miscalculated or whatever. So I would be a little less fearful and a little less angry if this the partnerships were partnerships, but they're not. It's basically, you know, a giveaway.
Yeah.
So it is somewhat all related, and I think the problem is that the first plan was much, much better than the second, you know, the second plan that they're trying to push. And this whole bit about money I would almost say is an idle threat.
Right.
Which scares me is that we have millions and millions of dollars more to go into NYCHA housing for the rebuild, and we can't get NYCHA or anyone else in the city to stop bad, bad contractors from being paid. The main contractor on the Smith project, Navalis, was fined over $60 million for lying about their labor status. So the city seems to be attracting people with not the best reputations.
I see. So, and that's happened. Sometimes that happens when people feel there's a land rush and there's money being shoveled out. You know, the mayor's had some problems. There's been ethics complaints against the mayor that were justified. And although ethics complaints are not criminal complaints, but they are ethics complaints. Do you feel that the mayor is getting support and donations for his various campaigns from people?
Well, we definitely know that. You could just check those records. But also even look at the law firms that have been, you know, part of his election team, his campaign team. They're the same, you know, the same law firms that are representing developers and people in Rebney. So to me, that's, you know, we don't want to do guilt by association, but at least I see a few red flags going up.
Right. And that's many. And you're not the only one who's been saying that. We've done many stories on the news here about these justified ethics complaints that were found to be actual or true. And as I said, an ethics complaint is not a criminal thing at all, but it is an ethics complaint. And it shows a red flag, as you said. It's at 8:30. You're listening to WBAI in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. My guest is Joel Kupferman. We've been talking about the East Side Coastal Resiliency Project, which is causing a lot of eyebrows to be raised along the Lower East Side region and two bridges. And the Battery and up the West Side, the Big U, they're calling it, in order to try and prevent the waters from flooding New York. Joel, we're going to take a little bit of a break, but I'd like to invite you to stay on if you'd like, and we're going to take some calls, and maybe some folks will have some questions for you. And heat wave. We're having a heat wave, and we're expected to have heat waves, according to the city of New York, which has been publishing studies that they've done, according to the city, as I've learned as a member of Community Board 3 and as sitting in meetings of the city and hearing the city folks make their presentations, that we're going to have a 250% increase in heat waves in the next few years, not in some distant future. We're going to have a 6 to 7 degree increase in the average temperature of the city. We're going to have a increase in the number of not just superstorms, of a chance of 1 in 100, which is a huge chance. Things 1 in 100 is a huge chance, right? There's 365 days in a year. And we also are going to have an increase in the numbers of smaller but still incredibly destructive storms, a vast increase in them. And these storms are all going to be stronger. The nor'easters we normally get in the wintertime are going to be much stronger. They're going to be much more destructive. They're going to cause much more flooding. This is just the tip of the iceberg of the problems that New York City is one of the most impacted cities in the world by the increase in sea level and by climate change. Now, we're also, and Joel Kupferman, who's joined us, is an attorney, and we've been talking about the East Coast, East Side Coastal Resiliency Project, which is this part of a huge plan, the Big U, it's called, to basically try and keep the waters out of Lower Manhattan, which is a $60 trillion, multi-trillion-dollar real estate investment that is facing inundation by floods. That's all at sea level. Just take a ride on the Staten Island Ferry and see it. that there's other plans as well. There's a plan to build a dam we've talked about on this air, a gigantic causeway-style dam that would go from Long Island to Sandy Hook, New Jersey, and would be 5 or 6 miles long with a highway on top of it, and which would allow the waters to be stopped. And we've had Riverkeeper on talking about how this would totally disrupt and destroy the estuary system and the life of the Hudson River they've worked so hard since the days of Pete Seeger to try and protect. Just in one fell swoop, it's destroyed. And then in my neighborhood, which I'm mostly concerned with, but also in Two Bridges, where it's just part of our community board three, they have many, 30% of the people who live near the coastal areas of lower Manhattan, 30% make less than $50,000 a year. So whatever people think that somehow there's a gentrification going on, yes, there has been gentrification going on, but still 30% of the million or so people down there, hundreds of thousands of people, are basically lower middle class or poor, living in public housing or scratching paycheck to paycheck their lives. So they are among the first to be to face these climate change problems. And we're the canary in the coal mine. New York City, in a lot of ways, is the canary in the coal mine. So Joel Cooperman, you've been working on a lot of things. As we talked about, you are an attorney for Smith Houses, which has been dealing with trying to get the city to fix their residences after the horrible inundation of Sandy. Why would they want to chop down trees? Why do they use Roundup? Why won't they listen to the environmentalists? Why won't they listen? Why is Riverkeeper a dirty word when you mention it? The first thing I want to do is get me off that board. Like, what? You said Riverkeeper, get off that board. We want you out. All of a sudden, they found some rule. You came here 5 minutes late. You got to leave. Why is that?
It's. I have a 4,000-hour talk about the law, and then I have a single phrase. It's called unequal enforcement. So
yes, that's it.
Yes, and it's amazing that we just. Will you assume me today? I think it's important to point out at the community garden meeting, there's a new license agreement that the city's trying to do, and it's very, very onerous, you know, in terms of basically digging into people's histories and who's listing and not listing and mistrusting the people that are there.
Right.
And yet the city, I think it's important to point this out, of how two-sided it is that they keep on talking about, and we've been one of the main critics of city council. People will tell us that, you know, the things are green and they have no power, is that in 2014, there was 531,000 ECB violations. That's Environmental Control Board. That's when people are putting the wrong garbage out, you know, on the streets, when builders are violating some of the rules in terms of getting rid of their waste or whatever. That's a lot, right? A half a million?
Yeah.
Cool?
Yeah,
seems like a
lot.
Yeah. $200 million in uncollected fines from the health department and $200 million uncollected fines from the Department of Environmental Protection, which just means it's not even a slap on the wrist. So we're told over and over again that the city is enforcing these laws, you know, and I'm sure there's people even who drive cars that are getting $100 tickets, you know,
yes.
for parking in the wrong spot are screaming like, why me? And the people who are doing bad, not only are doing bad and not paying these paltry, you know, fines, that they're getting contracts, and they're getting contracts from the city. So it's also an ongoing cycle of basically rewarding, you know,
right,
the developers that are out there.
All right,
and
great.
I would even say,
yeah, go ahead. Right, go ahead.
And part of the thing about putting person after person, I mean, part of the thing is divide and conquer neighborhoods and whatever from even, you know, from a political and legal standpoint. But if we look at all, if people just look back like 10 years in terms of the housing crisis, people are getting forced out by the rezoning and everything else. So I believe that if we just call for moratorium on new housing developments, that people have a better chance of preserving their house than they have now.
I see. So, Joel, I want to give folks who are listening a chance to ask you any questions. They have 212-209-2877 is our number. Again, I'll say that slowly, 212-209-2877. You should put it on your speed dial. You should put it on your contact list so you can call right away when we give it out. And we want to take your calls and any questions about what's happening on the east side, what's happening with Roundup. You're an expert on that. What's happening with the way the city is relating to the public in this sort of paternalistic way. in which they're serving the interests of the big corporations and the landlords and doing very, very little for anybody else. And I like to talk a little bit about the FDR drive because the progressive folks want to deck over the FDR drive. Why not do that? Preserve the park, use the FDR drive as the wall against the waters, and yet the city doesn't want to do that. And some say they're protecting the FDR drive, even though it's 100 years old, ready to fall down. And they've even admitted the next big storm might knock sections of it down, because it's the outlet for the governor's and the mayor's congestion pricing plan. And before we go to that, I want to talk about that. We do have a call on the line. Let's give that caller a chance. You're on the line. Welcome to WBAI.
Hello, thank you. I hear you're trying to get a more deliberate and more strategic approach, because it sounds like the powers that be are kind of jumbled and rushing to spend a lot of money, but it doesn't sound like that plan is so decisively, it's so perfectly effective, you know? It sounds all... But let me ask you a question. Why don't we implement true green principles, like if we stop the oil consumption, if we really go green, we'll mitigate the climate debacle. We'll mitigate it by making good laws, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Norway. You heard about Norway?
Go ahead.
By 2025, no combustion engines allowed.
I see.
They made a strict law, but we don't even try to implement an altruistic approach.
Why don't you think that is?
Why don't you think it is?
Why don't you think it is?
Because, like you were talking about Roundup. You know, Reverend Billy has been preaching in Mitchell Cohen about Prospect Park. They're spraying. Why do they spray that when there's little children there? I mean, it's so sick.
But why do you think?
I don't know. I went to the Verizon protest for 5G, and the Verizon guy told me, well, you know, there's too many people in the world. We got to kill half of them. I mean, I'm not kidding. He said that.
Okay. All right, Joel, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, good questions, but also we talk about the laws without the enforcement. That's my shtick. The city council passed the bill that requires zero emissions or whatever by buildings, and I think in 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, you know, there's a goal.
Yeah.
But the city is not even forcing these landlords to provide heat to parents with young kids. So part of it is it's very aspirational. I think it's very important to talk about setting goals in 10, 15 years from now, but you got to look at who we're giving those controls to. You know, that's what upsets me, is that to me it's a little bit of a smokescreen. We definitely have to follow Norway, and part of the reason why Norway could do that is because they made all that money on oil also and have it in reserves. But I think it's really important not just to look like to the future, but look into the past and see who the players are. And what they're doing.
And do you think the law is a way of doing that? We could use the law, but we're losing some of the
laws,
right.
But also, I'm going to say that we bring them to court, and it's there's NRDC and Riverkeeping or whatever. And part of the problem has to do with the judges, and the judges have a standard they have to use as deference. They give deference to the agencies, okay. And part of the problem is over deference, meaning that whatever. It's, even if it's irrational, a bad judge is going to say, look, you presented your side and it's another side. And they try to make every case into a divorce case. So that's part of the legal.
He said, you said. She said, he said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to remind people that we're at 212-209-2877, taking your calls here with Joel Kupferman here on WBAI. I'm Paul D'Arienzo, James Orsay at the controls. And go ahead, caller.
Can I just say one thing?
Go for it.
We need a new paradigm. I mean, we can't keep doing this. Like I call them fossil fools. Get the fossil fools out and get these. We have to change our dynamic here. We cannot keep doing it. How do we do that? That's my question, basically. How do we change the dynamic and wake the people up? You know, and this gentleman is obviously awake, but
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you. Thank you very much, caller. Thanks for that, caller. And again, we're taking your calls at 212-209-2877. What do you think about this plan? Do you live down there in NYCHA housing along the Two Bridges area? What do you think? You see the waters coming in. You see the need to build this no matter what, to save your homes, to save your lives. I can understand that. Environmentalists, all the folks who live there, do you think that the raising the level of the park by many, many, many feet and virtually cutting off access to the waterfront and destroying a park they just spent millions of dollars building in the first place is an unwise situation, especially when the trees are being cut down and you're depending on mechanical devices that are supposed to work even in the most difficult situations to save us.
Toxic soils are being exposed.
Say again?
Toxic soils are being exposed and uncovered. We found that Smith up to 240 parts per million of arsenic in the soil.
Uh-huh.
16 is the level that is supposed to be a cleanup, and some people say 1 should be the level. And if even after finding that, we couldn't force the contractor who's getting money from these, you know, under the supervision of 3 levels of government to even cover up that soil.
So, I see. The soil that they'll use to raise the level of the park many feet in order to protect the neighborhoods will actually itself possibly be contaminated, according to what you've already discovered, with arsenic and other poisonous toxic.
Exactly. And we also were told from the city health department. First, they said that in their 2016 survey of all the pesticides used by agencies, that Roundup is not that dangerous. This is pre-California cases. But the second line after that, they said when glyphosate, the main ingredient of Roundup, hits heavy metal soils, it could result in kidney failure. So our own health department is admitting that it's not just Roundup is bad, but when it hits that soil, you have a double bad martini, you know.
Right.
And they still insist on using it. So to me, you keep on using the word red flag. You know, we have a whole battery of red
flags. Well, New York City constantly tries to present itself as progressive, especially under this mayor and at the cutting edge of this environmental and everything that Donald Trump isn't. And from what you're saying and what we're uncovering here, there's a lot more to the story. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead. You're on the line. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I think all this is about a transfer of wealth. They really don't care about us.
Right. Do you have a question?
What about the military? I mean, they pollute more than anybody else. I mean, it's great we want to save New York, but I mean, the whole global thing which is causing it, I think, is a big offshoot of the military.
That's interesting. How do you think that relates to New York City, though, where we're battling this climate change, which is very real?
The climate change.
Yeah, I'm not allowed. We're not even allowed in the city to use the term like human caused. The reason we say climate change instead of human caused or greenhouse gas or global warming or that kind of thing is because we're not allowed under all these government rules to even discuss the fact that humans have anything to do with it. We discuss it as cut off from anything that humans do. It's just happening that we have to deal with it.
You know, I watch him every afternoon here in Queens. I live by JFK. I watch him spray the skies every day.
There you go.
What am I breathing in? Nobody wants to admit it.
Right.
They can't take the fluoride out of water. They want to make us dumb and stupid that way the 60s don't repeat themselves. They don't want people in the streets.
Well, the year 2000 doesn't repeat itself. You raise a good question. You don't know what you're breathing in. There's no lessons learned from 9/11. It was actually the Law Project, who grabbed the samples in front of the World Trade Center and had it tested. But what sparked our interest is that the radio reports kept on saying DEC air monitoring reports are saying that the air is not that bad. And we got those reports from the city, the state, and the feds. And they were relying on 3 monitors in lower Manhattan and eventually went up to 4. And that's the report. But now they've gone down to 0 monitors. So there's billions of dollars being spent for 9/11 survivors and people asking, you know, for more. But we refuse. The city doesn't want to know or have to tell people what they're breathing in. So to me, people living on lower Manhattan have got to ask, why are they spending billions on highways and big dams and whatever, concrete in the park? Why the hell isn't the city telling us what we're breathing there? I think that's one of the first questions we should ask every elected official that's out there.
And Joel, I have to admit, I have to add this, that I noticed that they have these machines everywhere that seem to be sampling the air, and they never tell us what they are. They keep them a secret. They're in the subways. They're around the streets. They're hanging from poles. They're testing something, and we never see reports of what they're actually finding.
Exactly. We had problems even finding out where they were spraying the Roundup. But good point about those machines. We learned after a little while, and we knew that the subways are the vehicles that can carry the World Trade Center dust and the like. But those monitors were basically placed with federal money to fight terrorists. So they're still playing the terrorist card and all this environmental stuff, and they're not telling us what we're breathing.
So that's all like secret. There's a military.
Monitoring information should be shared, you know, and it should be used. And then we've also gotten a little more cynical that even when we find high levels of arsenic or lead in the air, whatever, they start, you know, we have a whole bevy of apologists saying it's just a quirk, it's not that bad. It's the equipment might be off or whatever. So it's monitoring is necessary but not sufficient. But right. Everyone's got the right to know what they're breathing and what they're drinking. Our second, we just got retained by the residents of St. Nicholas Housing, which is up in Harlem, and there was 3 cases of Legionnaires outbreak, people suffering from Legionnaire disease.
Yeah. No, very. This is all very interesting. I'm letting you talk, Joel, because you're informing. I never knew any of this stuff, and I don't think anybody in New York. And the reason we're having this show today and I'm having you on is because over and over again, people told me this, that down there in Two Bridges, everywhere I go, people say they haven't heard anything about this. They know nothing about it. And thank you, caller, for joining us. And we love your call. We're going to move on to the next call. Our number is 212-209-2877. We only have a few minutes left, so you want to fit a call in. Now's the time, 212-209-2877. Joel Kupferman is our guest, and we're talking about the environment. And as I was saying, nobody knows anything, and I get the impression they don't really want us to know from the way they're conducting these public meetings. Hello? You there? I think we left. Did we lose Joel? Call him again. Let's see if we get him. Sorry about that. Oh, there you are. There. Yes, Joel, can you hear us? Yeah,
he made a refrigerator run.
Oh, that was it. All right, so Joel, that's what I was saying. It seems like they're trying to keep the information away from us.
So one of the things we're doing is we want to arm people with, we don't like the word citizen only, but citizen science.
Yeah.
To make people back to becoming participating in the monitoring, and we want to set up a tree warden system where people not just monitor a few trees that they sort of adopt, but to help become the protectors. So when those trees are being injured, we're going to, with the help of botanists and arborists and law organizations such as myself, my group and others, you know, to do that. And we're going to be working with people to do workshops where people can to start doing air monitoring in their own apartments and, you know, mm-hmm. and out there and the like. So
right.
I'd like to give you my website.
Yes.
Which is a little static, but it's nyenvirolaw.org.
Mm-hmm.
Our phone number is 212-334-5551, and we're going to be posting of what people could do in terms of community right to know laws, FOIL requests and the like. We're going to be doing workshops, but we really believe that we really have to link hands, you know, across the city and fight back.
So New York, NY Enviro Law, and your number is 212-334-5551. For
right.
more information.
nyenvirolaw.org.
Right. .org, right? And just the last minute or two here, how should we sum all this very troubling information up? How should we what's the takeaway on this?
Beware of wolves in sheep clothing. I would say that it's important to remain skeptical and critical, and I think it's really important that it's just important to have communities fighting together, but also a lot of nonprofit organizations. And then people out there should support all the small and big nonprofit law organizations that are definitely out there fighting for environmental justice.
All right. Great. Joel, thanks for joining us on WBAI. It was short notice, and you're really a trooper for coming out and staying with us for a whole hour and discussing these very, very crucial issues. And thank you so much for your work.
Okay, and I hope to return anytime.
Great, thanks. I'm going to keep your number in the Rolodex. Thank you very much for joining us. All right, that was Joel Cooperman, nyenvirolaw.org. nyenvirolaw.org. Number 212-334-5551. I'm Paul D'Rienzo. This has been a pop-up Let 'Em Talk. Thanks for joining us on these very, very difficult and crucial issues of the day having to do with our city and its response and lack of response or over-response to the sea level rising threat. And we have to talk more about how humans are adding to this, because this is kept out of the discussion so much, and it's great that we could touch on the human aspect that we are causing this. This is not just something that's coming out of nowhere. So we're going to leave with a little bit of music, and I'll see you on the news Tuesday at 6 p.m. WBA Evening News is weekdays at 6 p.m. I'm on starting Tuesday, 6 p.m., and we're going to keep covering the news and try and uncover the issues of our day. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks, James Irsay, for engineering. And, of course, thank you to our great program director, Linda Perry, for allowing us to do this program. Have a great weekend.